You're listening to Recovery, Healing, Outreach, and Awareness, a podcast about domestic violence, sponsored by Randy's House of Angels. Domestic or intimate partner violence is a complex and silent epidemic that affects millions of people worldwide. To respond to the overwhelming issues associated with domestic violence, Randy's House of Angels has produced a series of podcasts that will bring this epidemic to the forefront of public consciousness and break the silence that often shrouds it. This is Paul Miller, producer of this program, and by creating a dedicated platform, Randy's House of Angels hopes to create a safe space for survivors, advocates, and experts to share their stories, insights, and knowledge. A series of topics will be discussed that can offer vital support and resources to victims and survivors, helping them realize that they are not alone and that there is help available. It can also serve as a catalyst for raising awareness and fostering necessary conversations within families, communities, and institutions to empower individuals, foster empathy, and inspire collective action toward eradicating domestic violence while creating a safer, more compassionate society. We invite you to access the podcast by going to randyshouseofangels.org. On today's podcast, we will discuss the importance of understanding the intersection of love, tradition, and the complexities of intimate partner violence, how cultural norms and expectations shape attitudes toward relationships and affect power dynamics within intimate partnerships. We will discuss the impact on children and what occurs in the home and approaches to prevention that take cultural factors into account, including education and awareness tailored toward specific communities. Joining us today is Dr. Samuel Benbow. Dr. Samuel R. Benbow is an associate professor in the Department of Social Work and Gerontology at Shippensburg University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Benbow has worked for several years in the mental health field in such roles as intensive case manager, intensive and resource case manager supervisor, behavioral specialist consultant, mobile therapist, and the director of residential treatment facilities prior to his tenure as a full-time tenured track faculty at the Shippensburg University of Pennsylvania in 1998. The facilitator of today's podcast is Dr. Ellen Smith. Ellen Smith, MD, retired after 30 years of teaching and practicing family medicine in the Harrisburg area. Her undergraduate studies were at Hollins University, and she completed her medical degree at the Penn State University College of Medicine in Hershey, PA. In addition, she completed a family medicine residency at Lancaster General Hospital. Since retiring, she has studied adversity, how a traumatized brain works, and how to bounce back and become more resilient. She is passionate and appreciative of the opportunity to educate thousands of people about these topics. She also volunteers at the Trinity Preschool of Harrisburg, a grant-funded, inner-city, trauma-informed preschool. Finally, she has developed a tool called the Personal Resilience Planner, which takes the above concepts and provides a practical way to look at strengths, trauma responses, resilience, and how to progress in these areas over time.
Dr. Sam Benbow, welcome. We're glad you're here.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Today we're talking about exploring how cultural traditions impact domestic violence, and over time in these podcasts we've been talking about various things in terms of domestic violence and how it shows up and how people manage and how people get out when that's appropriate. And you talk about the intersection of love, tradition, and complexities of intimate partner violence. Domestic violence, intimate partner violence are similar, the same thing. And I'd love to hear your comments about love, tradition, and the complexities of intimate partner violence.
To start, I grew up in inner city Philadelphia, single parent home. I have three older sisters and my mom. These are the places where you learn what love is, what relationships are, how to behave in a relationship, be it as the only boy, how I'm supposed to treat my sisters. It was always reinforced, you never hit your sisters, right? You never hit women. That was from my mom's lens. And then my sisters could hit me. It was okay, but not okay. Like, there was no consequences for them because I was that rambunctious kid. You begin to form your perspective of relationships when almost all my friend group were from single parent homes. My two friends that had dual parents, both of the women were stay at home and their husbands worked, and one worked, and we never had, you know, I think of Mr. Al, never ever did the kids get in trouble, my friends get in trouble, because they had to deal with mom, and then dad would come home. And dad would leave first thing in the morning, not come home until the evening. And then Ronnie, his dad, Mr. Mack, worked a newspaper stand, always had these side hustles going on. His wife was at home, and anything that happened in their home, wait till dad got home, right? And so it was, what was the message that was being reinforced to me about relationships, right? That the man ruled the house. Even though I'm in a house full of a woman and three women, I mean, and three sisters, and my mom and three sisters, I'm still getting that reinforcement, not from home, but from every other place in my world. And so then it comes to developing relationships with women, be it friends or girlfriends, whatever that means. And my reinforcer is, my mom has boyfriends who are physically assaultive, verbally assaultive, emotionally assaultive. And so, and it's okay, because it's not one experience. It's a number of different boyfriends. At one point, we used to call them uncles, right? You know, uncle so-and-so. And I can think of some of these guys. I keep thinking, so how did this impact how I see relationships in inner city Philadelphia, where the norm is that my mom had a house, men would come stay for weeks and or months at a time, depending on what relationship she was in. So what's that telling me? That it's okay to have multiple partners. It's okay to be rude, disrespectful. Now, I'm interpreting this now as a grown man, but then you could call women bitches. You could do things, and the culture was accepting of it. I also grew up in an era where there was rap music that reinforced some of the stereotypes. So it wasn't just in my home. It was in my friend group. It was in the music that we listened to. It was in the TV shows that we watched. So even, like, there was a time where I watched Hee Haw. But looking at Hee Haw in the 70s to present day, I get sickened. Because now you see how the women are dressed. The men are in power. The men are in control. And this was reinforced. And so there was never a woman that was in control. And even though the women ran the house, my mom ran the house, I still behaved as if my mom didn't matter. How does that then result in this idea of culture? So if this is what I'm socialized to think and or believe, I then went in the Marine Corps. Guess what happened? It was reinforced. And you break that cycle by the people that you are around. Now, you could become educated, but it's life experiences. And even my faith system reinforces women are subservient to men. Identify as a Christian. How you interpret that is up to you. For me, women, men are head of household. Tell my wife that now. Like, that shit, it just doesn't roll the same way. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. Because I have a very strong, independent wife who, thank God, that was my friend, who ended up being my girlfriend, who end up being my fiance, who end up being my wife, and we're going to celebrate 30 years here in a couple of weeks.
Congrats, right? That's wonderful.
And so my daughters have never seen any other relationship but ours in terms of breaking that cycle of what's acceptable, what's not. They've never, ever, ever heard me call my wife anything else but a pain in the butt. She's probably called me a few names. But there's this respect that we've reinforced in our daughters. There's this idea of what's acceptable, what's not. I don't put my hand on my wife. My wife don't put her hand on me. We don't watch movies or videos. We don't do things that create that kind of environment. And so now I have a 27-year-old and a 21-year-old who have a more difficult time developing relationships because they will not accept. And I kind of go, that's okay. I believe there's someone for everyone. But what happens then in my personal life, now it transfers into the work that I do, right? And so now I'm working with college students, and prior to that, I was a director of a residential treatment facility. And I did work with regards to individual and small group counseling. And part of that work is getting people to understand the impact of relationships and how all that stuff we bring with us, regardless of where it comes from, how that then influences our interaction, right? And so when I talk to students who just met this person, they met them in late August when we came to campus, and by the second week in September, they're in love. And then doing all these weird, odd things, all of a sudden you're changing your parents. There's so many students I've talked to that I kind of go, all right, don't let anyone steal your thunder or change who you are. Help you grow, but you got to have some foundation. The problem with it is that they often don't know what their foundation is. And so they have pieces of your personality, pieces of your personality, pieces of yours. And I initially said I grew up in inner city Philadelphia. That's part of my personality. That's culture. And so I said I have a faith system. And in my faith system, all of the 99% of the authority in my community, police officers were males. There were female police officers, but the vast majority were males. Business owners were males. My teachers in middle school and high school were predominantly males. There were females in my elementary school, because that's where they're nurturing and mothering, right? Like, they can't do it above that, which is pretty weird. But then I get in the Marine Corps, the vast majority of people around me are male, in terms of leadership positions, not just people you interact with, but people who have authority. And how they're carrying themselves guides how you carry yourself, right? And so when I talk to some young people, I kind of go, so why are you in this relationship? Well, Dr. Bembo, hey, I just want to let you know that I'm pregnant. I go, is that a good or bad thing? You're supposed to be happy for me. Wait a minute, so we just spent the last 4 or 5 times talking about how unhealthy this relationship is, and now you're excited because you're pregnant. Now, the social worker in me goes, okay, if you're not careful with how you manage your life, that child's going to end up in our system in some form or fashion. All right, why you got to be negative? I'm not being negative. I'm just being real, right? So there's other drawback to a personality like mine. Let's have real conversation. I would love to sugarcoat it, but the reality of this is, if you're in this unhealthy relationship, I want you to understand why you're still there. And the ability to either identify it or move from it. Because part of this reoccurrence of these unbelievably unhealthy relationships is that it's better than nothing, right? Like when I think back on my mom, and actually think my two of my 3 older sisters have been in relationships that I don't know how to be alone. So I'm the youngest. I have a sister who's 11 months older than me, so we're twins for a month, which is really weird. It's just like, and then it's a year break, and then I have 2 older sisters. And my 2 older sisters have been in and out of relationships so often. But I understand it. Like, I do. Like, this is what we were all raised to see and think was okay. Right? So I've been married once. And I'm blessed. Like, my wife's pretty cool. Right? But it was intentional that I didn't get married that we didn't have children until we were in our 30s. And it wasn't because it was about finances. It was about we need to settle down and figure out what we are as a couple, what we value. And do we have the time and space, emotional space, to take care of a child? And this is not perfect, because we've done things that I look back on like, ooh, I wish I hadn't done that. But I understand where it comes from. For example, like so the first time my wife, my oldest daughter, Olivia, she was 2. And this was probably the first time that I had been alone with her for any given time by myself. My wife was like, all right, I'm going to movies with the ladies that I used to work with. I'm like, all right, dude, I got you. Like, we're adults. This is my baby. I got her. And one of the things I used to do was I used to throw her up in the air, right? And play with her, because my wife was my wife stayed at home for the first 2 years of Olivia's birth. So my wife goes out. This is on a Sunday. My wife goes out, and they go to the movies, and I'm playing with Olivia, and Olivia's just responding, like Googling the whole nine. We're having the time of our life. Well, I throw her up, just where I threw her up, her head hits the fan. The fan was isolated. My response was, oh my gosh, I'm getting in trouble. I'm a grown man thinking about getting in trouble by my wife for throwing my child up in the air. And my daughter cried. You know, we laughed about this now. She cried. And I was trying to get her to stop crying. I'm trying to do all these fun things, and she's crying, and she has this gash. And the fan, thank God the fan wasn't going super fast, but it was going. And so just throwing up like I normally throw up. But here's the funny thing, because we talk about this. The funniest thing about that experience is I was more worried about my wife, about getting in trouble with my wife, than I was about my child. And I had to get, now this is me somewhat feeling accomplished. This is me professionally, I'm in a different place. This is not my girlfriend, this is not my fiance, this is my wife. We have years of, and I'm scared about the reaction of my wife. I'll never let you be home by with the kids, by, like all kinds of weird stuff that goes through your mind. But when I finally got myself settled, I said, hey babe, you know what? I threw Olivia up in the air and she knocked herself in the head. And you know, that was dumb. She's like, oh my baby, of course she grabbed her. And oh my baby, baby. I'm like, I didn't kill the child. Like she's still good. Because by that time she had stopped crying. We were laughing and joking, whatever. But I have taken this thing as parenting so serious because I don't want the examples. I don't want the experiences that I was raised. And so part of that is respect that my wife is my equal and sometimes my better half. And I'm still a man, right? And you have to understand that so that when there are conflicts, when there are problems, there are challenges, some of the things that I had written all up in my head about how my wife would respond was based on what I thought would happen. And it was complete opposite. And to this day, we still joke about this. Right? Because we say that's why my daughter does some of the things she does, because she got knocked in the head. But when you talk about culture, when you talk about, you have to be in a position where you're willing to have and or have the ability to have these conversations with each other. And if you're not, and you just accept things the way they are guaranteed to repeat themselves. And if I see it in you and I don't say anything about it, I'm reinforcing that this behavior was okay. And so when I talk to students, when I talk to, when I was in a director of a residential treatment facility, you know, you're talking about teenagers who think that this person is their life. So I don't have to listen to my parents. I don't have to listen to X, Y, and Z. This person is my life. And I kind of go, because of all these messages that you've heard, right? And so part of this is unwrapping and untangling this mess that you've become, that's become the norm for you. Right. And so to be called out your name is the norm. And you know what I mean? Because I'm from. No. All right. I now am from Mechanicsburg. I was originally born in Philadelphia. I paid taxes in Mechanicsburg. Guess where I'm from? Mechanicsburg. That's a very different perspective because I respect how I grew up, what I grew up, what I knew, what I didn't know, and my life experiences in Philadelphia. But that was 18 years. Well, what happened to the other 40 years? I had all these other life experiences.
Did you know it costs about $400 to send a child to Randy's Camp or Randy's Kids Club? If you are interested in sponsoring a child, please contact Nancy Chavez at 717-503-4498 or email randyshouseofangels@gmail.com for more information.
The other thing that happens when we talk about culture is if you don't align yourself, so when I align myself to rap music, when I align myself to friends who are single parents and or friends who have dual parents, but they fit the traditional role of don't let your dad come home and see that something's broken. Don't let your dad, right? We were afraid of, I think of Mr. Mackey and Mr. Al now. We were, as kids, intimidated by them as if they were our fathers. They didn't joke. They didn't play. They didn't show up for anything. And I'm that complete opposite dad. I go to everything. Like, I'm blessed that I was able to create my life schedule that I took my daughters to work took my daughters to school every single day up until, like, 10th grade, where they had driver's license, and picked them up from the bus stop every day. School was in session. But I worked at a college where I could manipulate my schedule so that I didn't teach classes before this time, and I left campus at this time, right? And that was my thing. There were some examples around me. Like, I have a mentor who's probably in his early 80s now, Bob Hewitt. And he was the first man of color, man of God, who was my professor in the 80s, and we just developed this relationship and kept it going. And so when I talk about who you align with, if I'm aligning with the sensationalization of rap music, the sensationalization of TV shows, some of it's black exploitation, but also other TV shows, and my friend groups and all that, and I'm having these experiences where men are, right? And we got to post our chest up, and you don't shake hands, and you don't give hugs, and you don't do those things because those things make you weak or seem weak. And you have to be, like, so at 12 years old, I was sexually active. What 12-year-old is sexually active? Except it's the norm, or you see it as the norm. My friends are 13, 14, 15. So 12, 13, 14, 15, that group. Everyone else is playing, this is a game called Catch a Girl, Get a Girl. Right? And you may not have heard this, right? Right? And so you go hide, and you hide with somebody, and you kiss them. And that's your first version and form of sex. You know these games, you play these games, which again, sensationalizes women in a very different way, and normalizes whatever sex is. Like, you get to determine what sex is. It also sets up this idea that this is normal and expected behavior. And so to talk about somebody outside of their name, to be physically aggressive with someone, if this is the norm, this is the norm, right? And again, my mom could say, don't do these things. Don't hit your sisters, right? Like, I was not permitted to hit my sisters. Yeah, but you're getting beat up. That's inconsistent. That doesn't make sense to me. And so as an adult now, I go, I align with some people. I was thinking about Bob Hewitt and himself, who grew up very similar in his community in Ohio, and I think we aligned so well because he accepted me for who I am, knew that I had flaws, knew that, and he knew my wife, right? You know, he knew my wife is my girlfriend, and again, we're close to this day. But he said that, it's okay to just want to be with your girlfriend. It's okay to just want to be with your daughters. It's okay to not have to go out and do all these other things, because I'm feeling like I'm missing something, because as a guy, I'm supposed to be doing these things. It's okay to go to church and to be humble and have some civility about how you carry your life. I'm going to wrap it up like this. These things that I'm talking about all form how I then see my world as an adult, and how it then impacts how I teach, how I interact in my trainings, how I engage in conversations with people across all spectrums. So that's kind of how I'll wrap that up.
Oh, man, fantastic. I want to talk about, you've touched on this, but I want to focus on stigma and secrets. Mm-hmm. So much of what you've just described is about stigma and secrets. Mm-hmm. The stigma of you can be hit, but you can't hit, and yep. The secrets of the games, mm-hmm. and the rap music and things like that. So can you speak to stigma and secrets?
Sure. So sometimes, like, from a cultural lens, secrets are what's kept in the house. House meaning my physical location, house meaning within my friend group, within the people who know me, who know my community, right? So there's some things that I don't have to say. And so when we talk about domestic violence, I knew automatically that as an adult, My friends, both of Mr. Mack and Mr. Al, like, they were abusive to their wives. We just never talked about it. And they were abusive to their kids. Like, my mom was abusive to me. My mom was getting beaten up. My mom had syphilis, right? My mom was dating a married police officer who would spend his shift at our house doing drugs with my mom. And, like, you don't share that with other people. That's the unwritten stuff, right? That's and if you say something about it, then you're not in allegiance with the family, right? Or you're not in allegiance with the group or with the community, because it happens more often than not. You just don't talk about it. Talking about it is a sign of weakness. So what do? If you're in a relationship, like, so the one time my freshman year, I got out of Marine Corps, I came to college that December. For winter break, I go home. My middle sister is physically beat up by her longtime lover. It's her boyfriend. He's the all in all. She dropped out of school, ran away from home because of Gerald. Like it was that kind of, I love him and I'll do whatever he say kind of craziness. So this was hidden from me. Like, I'm part of the family. I'm part of the group. Why would you not tell me this is going on? Well, because we were afraid that you would do something. All right, so what am I going to do? I didn't think I would do anything. I go, it's her relationship. Like, it's not okay. It's more common than you think. You're not the first person I've seen getting beaten up. I don't understand why. And so, unfortunately, I saw him, and I reacted, unfortunately, not in a way that I intended to react. Because I couldn't understand how you're going to beat up somebody. You're going to beat up me. We can do this. That's not really a problem. And in response to that, he pulled out a gun. I pulled out a gun. He ran. I shot at him. This is freshman year. This is over. We had like a 25-day, 30-day break before the spring semester started. By the time that experience was over, I just knew I was going to get arrested. I just knew that I was going to get arrested. By the time I left to come back mid-January, they were back together again. So, what if I had shot him? It was an issue of aiming while he was running. What if we had gotten something significantly worse than just shooting him? Like, I would have killed him or would have permanently damaged him. Couldn't trust that my sister would not have pressed charges against me. This is at my mom's house. This is the other thing. This is at my mom's house. Like, I'm home for the break. This is at our house. And you have the audacity to bring this fool over here. And that's the culture. No one ever called the police. I'm not incriminating myself now. But right, like it's one of those things where you think about all of those life experiences and I go, that was the last time I went home. Like that was the last time that I spent a holiday home. I got an apartment that May in Shippensburg and I've stayed in Shippensburg every single break. I've just got an apartment because when I thought I was removed from that, that's scary. When something can pull you that back, and it was me pulling myself back, but that incident could pull it back. Ironically enough, here we are years and years and years and years and years later. All three of my sisters live in Shippensburg. It's the weirdest thing. But we all live in Shippensburg, and our relationship is uniquely different. And even my older sister now, the oldest of us, has an exceptionally unhealthy relationship. And they were actually over my house yesterday. Her and her husband was over my house yesterday. And I go, you just got your foot amputated. How in the world are you still smoking? Right? Diabetic. Got his foot amputated. Why are you still smoking? Like, help me understand this. And why aren't you saying something to him? They don't have the relationship where they can talk about these things, these real life things. I had a heart attack March the 22nd, 2023. I only know the date because it's my wife's birthday. So she will never let me live it down. Not that I need to live it down, but the fact that I have to take better care of myself because I didn't just impact me, I impacted her and impacted my daughters. But you have to be in a position in a relationship where someone can be honest with you about the things that you're doing and you not go all puffy. Like I'm hypersensitive to don't manhandle me. Talk to me like an adult and then we'll have conversation. But the ultimate decision is mine. But my decision is not my own. Right, because my decision impacts my wife, impacts my daughters. And so I was sharing this with my wife last night that my sister and my brother-in-law had stopped over. And she goes, I can't believe that they still smoke. I go, that's them. And he's driving, he shouldn't be driving. That's them. That's the choices that they make because they live day by day. They don't think about how those choices will impact the rest of us. Because if something happens, you're going to rely on us. And so part of that developing the stigma about what it means to be a man is you also got to be respectful enough to know that you don't know all the answers. If you're going to engage in a conversation with someone, be respectful enough that they may have a little more wisdom, a little more knowledge, a little more experience, a little more common sense than you. That's a hard thing to do.
You commented repeatedly about communication and relationships, mm-hmm. and you've had interactions with students and mm-hmm. probably colleagues and folks in the various treatment facilities. Can you give just a couple of things? We're trying to, you're trying to break the cycle. You've mm-hmm. broken the cycle, mm-hmm. although you're not perfect with your wife, yep. But you've broken the She's major right. part of the cycle. She's yep. never been beat up.
No. Oh, my gosh,
of course.
No.
But three things that those who are listening can kind of take home and think about in terms of their relationships.
Sure. The first is, if you're in a relationship, understand why you're in that relationship, right? That's very hard. So is it to get something out of it? Is it to release your own stuff? Regardless of what that relationship, because it'll be intimate at some point, or is it that you're my best friend? I go, well, what makes you my best friend? And if we are best friends, does that mean there's an understanding that when I'm not doing what I need to do, or I'm involved in something that's so unhealthy, physically or mentally, emotionally unhealthy, or economically unhealthy, that we can have some real conversations? And if we can't have real conversations, why are you my friend? So I know a lot of people. I have less than a handful of people that I can identify as my friend, because you can't have real conversation. Right. And so I kind of go, again, I go to use the example of I'm pregnant. Right. And kind of go, is that a good or bad thing? I can't go congratulations because I don't know. And if I do know the circumstances for what you, why you, you know, why you're in that relationship, I'm not evaluating a relationship. I just can't support it in that way. Right. And so the first thing is have it as best you can, have an understanding of what the relationship, the purpose of the relationship. Second thing is, and this is the hardest thing, I think, of the three things I'm going to suggest, is like get in tune with yourself. Like you have to be able to understand that you have value and you have worth. You don't get to determine my value and my worth. I do. But I have to teach you how to do that. Because if everybody's told you that you don't have value and worth, I now have to reprogram you to go, because it's only programming. It's a learned behavior. So I got to teach you how to love yourself, how to figure out that you are worth it, and then some. The third thing I'd say is, it sounds horrible, but everybody benefits from counseling or therapy of some sort. It could be through church. It could be through individual group work or group work or whatever. Every now and then, you need people to bounce this thing off of. Like, did I just really see that? Did I really just experience that? I just walked past and all these guys was Googling at me and making noise at me, and now I'm traumatized from it. Who do I tell that to? I don't know that you need to tell someone who's going to go, all right, let's go get them. I think sometimes to process that, how do I let that go and know that I'm valued and I'm worth, and that's not my value. That's not my worth. And so again, you know, I go back to the idea of one, any relationship you get into, why are you in it? Second, you know, spend some time working on yourself. Be okay understanding who you are and giving yourself the much needed value and worth that you truly have and are. And the third thing, more importantly, reach out to other resources, support systems. And again, I talk about counseling and therapy because I'm a social worker, but it doesn't have to be in that form. Like, it could be someone, like I have a mentor. I was using Bob Hewitt as an example. That's the guy that I spend time talking to about retirement. I'm talking to him about life choices, about how to buy a house, how to save money, how not to get mad when something happens that I think offends me, and how I can channel that energy. And it goes beyond just him saying, hey, you just need to pray about it. He says, pray about it, but then you need to act. If I didn't have people in my life like that to give me some of those kinds of gems, I can't tell you where I would be, right? But I don't know that I'd be in the same place in terms of satisfaction in my life the way I am.
Right. So something that I've heard that I think you're telling us is that we teach people how to treat us. Mm-hmm. And so you've shown others how you want to be treated as a man, yep. And others have taught them other people about how they want to be treated. Mm-hmm. So we have a very short time left. Any last minute comments that you just want to make sure that people hear?
Yeah. So when I think about like domestic violence, I think about the idea that it's not a permanent thing, right? It feels like that. It feels like there's no way out. And I kind of go, there is always a way out. But sometimes it requires folks to pull us along, us to align with some people that we trust and believe that have our best interests at heart. So I'm in an abusive relationship, and you tell me to go back to that abusive relationship. You don't have my best interests at heart. You have convenience of, you're the mother of, right? And so you need to be back home with. And I kind of go, no, you don't. And so, I, you know, part of, you know, what I share with people, like, again, I talk about that being to yourself, and understanding who you are and giving yourself value and worth and making sure people around you value and worthy what you bring and who you are, you can break the cycle. You have to do it with resources. And my last statement is, this is a movie with Tom Hanks, and he's stuck on his island and he has that volleyball. Mm-hmm. Now, so here's the sad thing. Tom Hanks, throughout that daggone movie, talks about this character, Wilson, and humanizes Wilson. That there's a part of the movie where he falls asleep on the raft and Wilson drifts off. And if you remember nothing else, that daggone volleyball, when that thing drifted off, all of us who watched the movie was like, oh my gosh, Wilson. It wasn't a person, it was a volleyball. But we had given so much time and attention, and I'm saying, you know what? We're more value than a volleyball. And we see people around us every single day. We have to give them value. We have to give them worth. So if I know something's going on, I'm telling you, I'm going to step in. And I think we all have that responsibility. And I don't mean jump into your relationship. I mean pull you to the side, maybe have conversation, link you to resources and so forth. So that's kind of how I want to leave that, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense, and you're going to provide some resources, which you're going to put on the webpage, and that's wonderful. Dr. Sam Bembo, thank you so much for your time and
you're
talents and wisdom. Keep doing it.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
Randy's House of Angels is sponsoring season 2 of a series of podcasts that will serve as a resource to anyone impacted by domestic violence, including parents, guardians, caseworkers, health providers, advocates, teachers, trauma specialists, clinicians, and more, to provide an overview of domestic violence and how to handle situations where domestic violence is present. Season 2 will include a series of 7 podcasts that will include an overview and understanding the link between domestic violence and homelessness, the relationship between domestic violence and pet abuse, how to navigate domestic violence in an LGBTQ+ relationship, understanding teen violence, the challenges of survivors and resilience revolution from victim to victor, and exploring how cultural traditions impact domestic violence. The podcast will include testimony and stories from experts who work in the field of domestic violence, criminal justice, and social work academia, and a survivor who was a victim of the domestic violence. This podcast will be broadcasted starting in July 24 and running through September of 2024. Go to Randy's House of Angels website at randyshouseofangels.org if you missed the podcast, if you'd like any of the resources that support the podcast, and to take a brief survey. Your feedback is essential to shaping and informing future episodes of our show.